This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And today we're going to talk to an extraordinary individual, one of the pioneers in the low-carb revolution, but also a lightning rod of controversy in his country, which is South Africa. He's Dr. Tim Noakes, and Dr. Noakes is distinguished as a South African scientist. He's an emeritus professor in the Division of Exercise Science and Sports Medicine at the University of Cape Town. He's had numerous publications. He's made a big impact on sports medicine throughout his career. But lately, he's turned his attention to diet. He has personally run more than 70 marathons and ultra-marathons, so he knows whereof he speaks. He walks the walk and doesn't just talk the talk. Author of several books on exercise and diet, and he is known for his support and advocacy for a low-carb, high-fat dietary paradigm, as set out in his books, The Real Meal Revolution and The Lore of Nutrition, Challenging Conventional Dietary Beliefs. The Real Meal Revolution achieved sales of 200,000 copies in South Africa, which would be a bestseller even in the United States, but that is a huge bestseller in a country much smaller scale reading public. And he's really revolutionized the dialogue about diet in his home country. However, been subject to a great deal of controversy. We're going to talk a little bit about the trial of the century in South Africa. It's kind of like the Scopes Monkey Trial. He was on trial for dietary heresy. And we'll get into that in just a moment. Dr. Noakes, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
Thank you, Ronald. Lovely to be with you.
It's my pleasure. Well, first of all, you know, before we get into the controversy and the trial, your career is actually kind of done a 180 because you were author of a very popular book, The Lore of Running, in which you kind of were advocating, if I'm not mistaken, kind of a carbo-loading paradigm. And that's early in your professional career. And of course, you were an inveterate exerciser at the time. How did you come to change from that to a different paradigm?
Yeah, absolutely. So I promoted the high carbohydrate diet for 33 years because I didn't know any better. And I had got this information when I started in cardiology research and early in my career. And that was the new paradigm, was that we should stop eating fat, and particularly saturated fat, and we should start eating carbohydrates. And it was at the same time that runners that the factor that determines your running ability is how much sugar or glycogen you have in the muscles before you start. So the two combined, and I kind of promoted that diet for 33 years. The problem was that on that diet, I developed type 2 diabetes. Hmm.
And this is even with a tremendous amount of exercise output, right? I mean, it was, you know, the calories in, calories out theory was kind of not applicable to you because I presume you didn't slow down during that time.
No, I obviously slowed down because I was getting fatter and less healthy. And I think that the high carbohydrate diet in people who are insulin resistant like myself, that takes away your capacity for exercise. Because I showed that, because as soon as I went off the diet, my running returned, went back 20 years. I went back from being a 60-year-old to being a 40-year-old in terms of my running performances. So in a sense, I knew that the carbohydrates were damaging my body. So anyway, I got this what I call the Damascene moment. Mm-hmm. I should say that Damascene moment.
Right.
In which I was running one morning.
As in the Damascus revelation, I guess.
So, that's correct.
Right.
So I'd just written the book Waterlogged, which you don't refer to, but which also challenged the idea that you must drink a lot during exercise.
Right.
And it had been a 30-year campaign of mine to understand why people overdrink during exercise and develop exercise-associated hyponatremia.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd finally written the book and sent it off to the publishers. And the next morning I woke up and went for a run, and I had this dreadful run. And I came home, and fortunately in my email inbox was an advert for a book called The New Atkins Diet for the New You. And I was so angry when I read it, because I saw the three authors, Drs. Westman, Finnick, and Voley. And I thought, these three traitors. Yeah, they're really good scientists, and they've gone with old Atkins, who's trying to kill us with all this saturated fat.
Right.
So I went down and bought the book, not because I thought they were right, but because I thought they were wrong. And I thought that they had sold out. So I was so angry, and I read the book, and after 2 hours, I said, oh my gosh, I got it all wrong for 33 years. And I said, but the only way I can find out is to do it. So I at lunch, I stopped carbohydrates. I took carbohydrates out of my diet, or almost all carbohydrates out of my diet. And I've been eating that diet now for 7.5 years. And I have type 2 diabetes, which is unbelievably well controlled. And it wouldn't have been, had I continued to eat the high carbohydrate diet for 7 years, I would be 30 or 40 kilograms, i.e. 40 or 60 or 70 pounds heavier. I wouldn't be running. I wouldn't be exercising. I'd be insulin dependent. And I'd probably have some of the symptoms of the disease. So reading that book really did save my life. And I didn't do anything for a year, because I knew that it would be so, I would get so criticized. But eventually I realized, you know, you have to tell people what's happened to you, because maybe people are still reading Law of Running and they're going out eating these high carb diets. And maybe like you, they're going to get type 2 diabetes. So your responsibility is to say, guys, I got it wrong. And I did that. And then there was this enormous backlash leading to this trial, which you've already mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And so that in a sense is how I converted from a high carbohydrate to a high fat promoter.
Yeah. And this paradigm, is it particularly relevant to the South African experience? Because South Africa is a country of mixed race population. You know, much like the United States, here we have Native Americans who were lean and very, very fit. And then with the transition to a modern diet, there was a tremendous incidence. Almost the majority of Navajos in the Southwest are becoming diabetic. It's almost the rule rather than the exception. Is this a similar situation happening in South Africa, also with an East Asian population as well?
No, it's identical, and you can trace it back to almost very similar conditions. So 1,000 years ago, the Nguni tribes came into southern Africa, and they were pastoralists, and they had cattle. They had the Nguni cattle, which are special cattle, are very resistant to poor grazing conditions, and they're very resistant to infections. And they were so prevalent that in one state in southern Africa, or in South Africa, in the KwaZulu-Natal, there were approximately 6 million Nguni cattle. And they then were wiped out by the British in the British Zulu War, the Anglo-Zulu War,
mm-hmm.
because the British came here to steal our gold. But the worst thing they did was that they wiped out the Nguni cattle.
It's like a scorched earth policy.
So you had a population who, just like your Plains Indians, were dependent on meat mm-hmm. for survival.
Right.
And they took that away. When the gold mines developed, then in the center of southern Africa, there was no farming, there was no agriculture. And what the South African government decided was that they had to develop growth of maize. And that was what happened in 1920. Maize started to become the most prevalent food stuff in South Africa. And today, 40% of the calories eaten in South Africa are maize, which is corn. It's of course, high carbohydrate. And that is driving the obesity with, of course, the sugars and the vegetable oils. But I believe that the indigenous people of southern Africa were meat eaters.
Mm-hmm.
They lost their meat, firstly because of the British, but then we had the Rinderpest virus, which went through in about 1898, and it wiped out many more cattle. And that forced the urbanization of the indigenous people. So they left and they went to live in the cities. And what were they going to eat in the cities? Of course, the white man's food. Mm-hmm. And so much like exactly what happened to the Plains Indians happened to our own indigenous people in South Africa.
And this kind of goes against a sort of romantic notion that prior to westernization, people in indigenous cultures were primarily vegetarians. You know, they ate fruits and vegetables. They were, you know, hunter-gatherers, maybe very, very small amounts of animal protein, lots and lots of carbs from root vegetables. You know, it seems that it probably different strokes for different folks in terms of different cultures, but certainly this was not a culture that consumed as much in the way of certainly refined carbohydrates or overall carbohydrates.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you go back further to 100,000 or 200,000 years ago, and if you come to the Southern Cape Coast, there's a very big theory developed by an American, Curtis Marion, wonderful, wonderful scientist, that there was a small population of 6,000 people in the Southern Cape Coast who survived, and that we come from that population. And they survived because they were eating fish. They had great access to fish, and they also had great access to meat from the wild animals. But if you go back 200,000 years ago, and if that is true, and if humans evolved from those 6,000 breeding humans, we were absolutely dependent on meat for our survival. And the whole growth of humans and our brains and our ability to run and our leanness, etc., they're all linked to being carnivores. So I think if you go far enough back, you find that humans were carnivory-made humans.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause because we want to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this message with you. So here goes. Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoppen with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuous free resource to you. And now back to our guest, Professor Tim Noakes. And you call the agricultural revolution in your book, quote, one of mankind's biggest mistakes. Why do you say that?
Well, I'm quoting people who are cleverer than me. So
okay, I've heard you're maybe paraphrasing. Somebody.
That's right. I'm quoting Diamond and various other people who were Jared Diamond, who were geniuses, and they make the point that forced core it gave us civilization, but it destroyed the earth, and that all the problems we have today came because we made food more freely available, but it was a lower quality food. And so we have many more people alive today, but in worse circumstances because they're eating poor foods and they have poor quality lives. And the problem is that we're still saying, well, actually, we must just feed more people. So we have to give even more people bad food. And that's the problem that we're facing now. My argument in South Africa, and we're trying to prove this, is that poor people can actually eat well on little money. The poor do not have to eat poor foods because there are many foods which are extremely healthy for us, which are not expensive. It's the refined foods and the processed foods that are, the prices are driven up, and they are so unhealthy that they cause huge medical problems in the long term and will ultimately bankrupt all medical services across the globe.
Indeed. And that's some of the research that's underway by the Noakes Foundation down there in South Africa, correct?
Yes, that's correct. We're trying to show that if you take people, urbanized populations who are eating the worst diets, because that is typical, the poorest get the worst foods. And we've shown we haven't done clinical trials yet, but in observation studies, when we change their diets, they become so much healthier. And 2 years down the road, they are still a lot healthier, and they still manage to live on this diet, despite the fact that people say you can't eat a healthy diet for relatively little money. You can, and we're proving it.
And that's great because, on the one hand, we in the States, we have a chain called Whole Foods, and some people refer to it as a whole paycheck, and it's sort of effete to think of healthy eating as something just as the province of the rich. Well, let's switch gears and talk about something which is really important. Everything we've talked about so far sounds eminently reasonable. In fact, by today's standards, somewhat tame because a lot of people are embracing a low-carb, high-fat, meat-based dietary paradigm. Of course, plenty of plant foods figure into that. It's not exclusively animal protein. But how was it that you, Dr. Tim Noakes, became subject of a... Well, I could call it an inquisition, but it was a trial, and you became a cause celeb across the world because you were actually prosecuted for heretical dietary suggestions. Tell us about that.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm quite active on Twitter, and what really happened, we now know, because we went through this trial, and which has been going on for 4 years, and cost me personally millions of rands and cost the prosecution tens of millions of rands. We found eventually that it was a setup. And what happened was in about October 2013, we published this book, The Real Meal Revolution. And as you've indicated in your introduction, it did extremely well. And everyone in South Africa at that time was talking about diet. There was no other topic. It wasn't football or rugby or other sports. Wow. It wasn't athletics, it wasn't Olympics, it was the Real Meal Revolution. And one of the consequences was that dietitians were being asked, so why can't we eat high-fat diets? Why is Noakes wrong? And they couldn't come up with answers. And so in my opinion, the public started to move away from traditional dietitians and started thinking, well, actually, with the Real Meal Revolution book, we can actually do what we need. We can understand diet and we will be fine. And we now know, without a shadow of doubt, that there was collusion between the Dietitians Association in South Africa, the Association for Dietetics in South Africa, and the Health Professional Council of South Africa, which is the board to which I'm, as a medical doctor, I have to register in order to practice as a doctor. Incidentally, I don't practice as a doctor, and I haven't for 15 years. I'm an academic. And I kept my registration going for other reasons, but I do not practice. I don't earn a living as a medical doctor. So we know that 5 days before I tweeted anything, the ADSA, one of the people on ADSA who would eventually report me to HBCSA, was in touch with the HBCSA people. And they were saying, Noakes is a problem. We have to address the Tim Noakes problem. And she was informed that the HPCSA had a plan for me. So now this is 5 days before. So 5 days later, a lady tweets and she asks a wee question. That's really important. She said to the effect that, is it safe for a mother, for mothers and babies to be on the Banting diet? I mean, that's kind of what she said. It wasn't exactly that. The key was that she said the we. She asked we. She didn't say I. And she didn't say baby. And when it's a we question, it is general information. And as a medical doctor, I'm allowed to give general medical information like that, because it's only information, not advice. And so then I tweeted that I said that breastfeeding was fantastic. She should continue to breastfeed and she should continue to eat the low-carb diet. There was no problem with that. But the key is to wean onto a low LCHF diet. And they picked that up because I think that the ADSA lady who reported me thought I was saying stop breastfeeding. I think that's what she originally thought. And she then, within 12 hours of that tweet going out, she had reported me to the Health Professional Council.
I read that she responded to you in a scream in all caps. You've gone too far, Dr. Noakes. And then the net result was, you know, I hate when people tweet or email me in all caps. It's like a scream.
That's correct. So she did that, and she reported me. And then about 2 weeks later, I was informed that there had been this complaint, and I had till May to answer it. So, and they actually, I didn't read the letter. Said you better take legal advice as well, because anything that you say can be used against you. But, you know, because I thought this is ludicrous, because the complaint was that I was going to kill people by giving them this advice. And I knew that's rubbish, because babies have been weaned onto these foods, the low-carb, high-fat diets, for generations, for millennia. Mm-hmm. And we wouldn't be here if humans couldn't eat like that, if carnivory was the basis for our existence. Weaning onto a carnivorous diet would clearly have been something we'd been doing for millions of years. So I wrote a four-page response. And what then next happened was that this went to a committee, and the committee couldn't make a decision whether to charge me or not. So they went to the one person.
This was for professional discipline to de-license you or strike you off the doctor's register. Was that the nature of this complaint? Correct. It wasn't a criminal complaint, hopefully, right?
No, that's correct. And unfortunately, it wasn't a criminal. If it was a criminal complaint, it would have got thrown out much quicker.
Yeah.
If we'd gone through the proper judicial systems.
Right. But this is more of a kangaroo court, as it is in the United States. You know, these are administrative hearings, and pretty much, you know, the laws of trial are suspended. It's kind of a kangaroo court.
Absolutely correct. So now the committee met, and they couldn't decide whether to charge me or not. So they decided, well, we better get more information in. So they called the one person who was completely unqualified to give a decision, because she had no qualification, as we describe in the book. But she had written the South African Dietary Guidelines, which all she'd done was she'd borrowed them from the American Dietary Guidelines and just localized them. And she, of course, said that what I said was wrong and everything, it was unethical and I was going to cause harm, etc. Now, the committee then met about a month later, by which time my own faculty of medicine at the University of Cape Town had written a letter to the local Cape newspapers distancing themselves from me, and in the most defamatory way, saying that they couldn't associate with this scientist who'd completely lost the plot. I mean, it was utterly defamatory.
Yeah.
And it was too terrible.
And demoralizing, because these are your academic colleagues, and they're cutting you loose, basically. They're dissociating.
Exactly. And we now know it's called mobbing. And mobbing happens when someone in a higher position does that, and they try to exterminate you. And then everyone in the faculty, so every medical doctor, every educator at the University of Cape Town Medical School would not talk to me, because if they did, they weren't part of the mob. And now they could be associated with me and they would be in trouble. And eventually I got the message through to a friend of mine, and he said, you know, you were victimized. He said, we all were too scared to say anything because you were the bad guy. And that's mobbing. And mobbing can cause suicide. It can cause all sorts of
things. I mean, it's a form of bullying, I guess. Maybe that's the corresponding word, but it's a group effort to discredit you. Can we pause, because we divide these podcasts into two parts, and I want to keep our audience in suspense, because this is a long saga, and I want to give it its due. Ultimately, you were vindicated. We're happy to hear, but we want to learn the details. The trial of the century. It started with a tweet. All this well-meaning exercise physiologist and MD was trying to do was provide support for a dietary paradigm that is long overdue, that has been disparaged and is now coming into its own across the world, internationally. It's the low-carb, high-fat diet. And we're talking to Dr. Tim Noakes, author of The Real Meal Revolution and the Lore of Nutrition Challenging Conventional Dietary Beliefs. We'll be right back with part two. Stay with us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.